morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santaferadiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the fifth day of the KSFR Fun Drive, and I would love to do a little check-in in the control room right now to see how we are doing. Are we almost at our goal?
Mary Charlotte, I don't have the update, but I'll get Dal to come in here and give us one here soon.
That would be terrific. Now, this is the time of the year where we ask you to make a call. 428-1393, 428-1393 is the number to make a pledge to KSFR. We're going to be doing something very interesting today. This coming weekend, Saturday, September 27th from 10 to 5 at Milner Plaza on Museum Hill right here in Santa Fe is the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival. There's nearly 80 women authors from throughout the state. It's the New Mexico, the Museum of New Mexico Foundation that is bringing all these women in, and there are going to be wonderful women authors from New Mexico basically talking about their work and showing you their literature and art, and we have seven of these women sitting right here around me at the Santa Fe Baking Company ready to talk to you about their work. Now, here is the deal today in terms of what you, the happy listener, can receive. When you are listening and you hear an author whose book you would like, the first three people who call in and make a pledge of $45 can get a copy of that person's book. Now, you're not allowed to say, I want the book of the person who's on the air now. You actually have to give their name and or the name of the book. So, get your dialing fingers ready, 428-1393. Our first author is Sandra Benson. She has a book called Tales of the Golden Corpse, Tibetan Folk Tales. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
How in the world did you get into translating Tibetan folk tales?
Oh, it was a kind of a long journey. I ended up in a refugee community in India for about 3 years, where I was studying Tibetan.
And were these refugees actually telling folk tales?
They were. Their storytelling is a very common activity at festivals or even hanging around after dinner. You know, they love to tell stories. And so I picked up a lot of the stories there. But actually, when I started seriously translating them, it was when I was starting to seriously try and learn Tibetan. And my teacher thought it would be a good idea if maybe I tried to study little stories that would help me learn it.
And so you were working with text at that point?
Yes, both text and people, because these stories are so common that the Tibetans from all different parts of Tibet know these stories, but they're all mixed up and different, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there. And so I would look at the text that I was working from and then also talk to different Tibetans, and some would just recite a tale from beginning to end, you know, just exactly the same as the others, and others would just be radically different. So this is kind of why I said I'm retelling the stories, because it's a mixture of all that.
Sandra Benson's book, which listeners can get if they call 428-1393, is Tales of the Golden Corpse. That sounds like an interesting one itself. Did you feel like when you listen to Tibetan stories, or when you read Tibetan stories, that they have Buddhist philosophy imbued in them?
Oh, absolutely. It's just throughout, whether or not they're talking about, you know, statues that come to life and do things that, you know, the Buddhist god would do, but then they kind of have a twist and don't do what a Buddhist god would do. They're just all sorts of different ways that Buddhism, the philosophy comes out, the concept of the bodhisattva, being compassionate to others. There are all different aspects of material objects from the Buddhist culture. There are malas that turn into, you know, magic beads, and you know, people pop out of the main bead of the mala. There's a process called fire puja that they do to make a smoke offering to really send greetings and compassion all around in the wind.
Now, these are stories that they tell to little children?
Yes, they are. They're stories for entertainment. They're not typically used for Buddhist teaching, but because it comes from the Tibetan culture, all those Buddhist values are imbued in all the stories.
It must be, I mean, when one thinks about the kind of fairy tales that we grew up with here and the kind of stories, well, let's hear a little, maybe a little piece of one, but one really wonders, you know, if you hear stories about bodhisattvas versus dragon slayers, whether you grow up differently.
Well, there are both bodhisattvas and dragon slayers in these tales, and actually some of the themes in the book come right out of the Cinderella, Cinderella tale or Tales of the Golden Goose. And I can read just a little bit from a book, one of the stories that's close to the theme of the Golden Goose.
Sandra Benson, Tibetan Folk Tales. Go ahead.
In this story, there's been a very poor man who goes up to the mountain to gather firewood every day. And he sits next to a stone lion and feeds the lion every day without expecting anything in return. And finally, one day, the lion says to him, you know, oh, you're so kind and compassionate. I'm going to give you a gift. And tomorrow, come with a little bag, and I'll give you something. So the very poor man comes in his tattered clothing, and he's been working very hard, and he finally gets to the stone lion, and he forgets that the stone lion said that he would give him something. And so he sits down with his bag, and suddenly the stone lion says to him, well, did you bring your bag? And the poor man says, oh, well, yes, I did. I just had this little bag here. And so the stone lion says, well, I want you to reach down my throat and see if you can find something down there and then put it in your bag.
Good heavens.
And so he reaches down into his throat, and what he comes up with is a fistful of gold. And over and over again, you know, the poor man goes, oh, my goodness, I am so incredibly lucky. And so he takes the bag and goes back down. And now, of course, he doesn't quite make it back up to work hard on the mountain anymore. But he does get noticed by a kind of real estate agent in the area, because this poor man has bought a big house and is very rich now, obviously. And so the real estate agent is kind of, well, you know, in olden times, real estate agent. He's wondering, how did this guy do this? So he said, well, I think I'll go ask this guy. And so he did, and found out about the stone lion. And the guy went up to the mountain. And this is
all we have time for.
Okay.
And so if you want to know how that story comes out, call 428-1393 or from out of area, 1-866-907-5737, 1-866-907-KSFR. You can get a copy of this wonderful book of Tibetan folk tales, Tales of the Golden Corpse, translated by Sandra Benson. Sandra, thank you so much for being with us.
You're so welcome.
Got some thank yous, Mary Charlotte.
Oh, goody.
Karen Stallings, thank you, Karen.
Karen, thank you.
Amy Turner from Rio Rancho, thank you, Amy. Thalia Sparling. Thank you,
Thank
Thalia.
You.
And Anonymous, who says MC is KSFR. Is that B-U-M-C? Is KSFR, for those who don't know that those are her initials.
In fact, they are.
Is KSFR's true treasure and getting better.
Thank you so much. Well, we are talking about the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival, and we have 7 of the 80 women who are going to be there this Saturday, September 27th, from 10 to 5 on Milner Plaza and Museum Hill. And Dillis Evans will be in the Children's Pavilion. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Dillis.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
We've had you on before talking about your wonderful book, Show and Tell, Exploring the Fine Art of Children's Book Illustration, which, by the way, can be yours if you make a contribution right now to KSFR of $45 for 281393. Now, you are an illustrator yourself.
Well, I was a fine artist, quote-unquote, and in New York, and went to art school, had exhibitions at the Green Mountain Gallery, was starving to death with all the other artists in the 60s and 70s. And
I thought you guys had a good time in the 60s
and 70s. Oh, well, you don't really want me to talk about that part, do you? Yes, we did. We marched, we did all kinds of things, and we all made endless spaghetti dinners to survive. But I finally found myself as an art director for Cricket Magazine, a children's book magazine, and it was just beginning. And in that five-year period, I learned about children's book illustration and was amazed that no one was taking it seriously as a fine art form. And I think I found my passion way back then in 72 or so. And after about 4 years, I started thinking about doing the book. And then I thought, well, I have to make a living still. What am I going to do? And then I read a review of a children's picture book that's 32 pages, full-color pictures, pictures on every page, just a little text on each page. And the reviewer who reviewed that book said, oh, this is a wonderful story, this and this happens, and so on and so forth. And they wrote a half a page of a review about the story, and then right at the end they said, and pretty little watercolors accompany the text. It's a picture book. And I said, I'm writing this book. Well, it took 25 more years of an agency business I started in New York before I actually got to writing this book. But that's where this first began, a long time ago.
I think for many adults, and probably some younger people as well, going through this book reminds one of the books one read as a child. For me, Eloise was the one that really popped out.
Eloise at the Plaza, written by Hilary Knight, who, by the way, is a man, and he's 82 years old now. And
he's fabulous. I mean, I've never met him. I think he's a wonderful author.
He's a dear friend. I met him in the 70s when he did work for me at Cricket Magazine. And he's a piece of work, as we used to say in England. I was at the Society of Illustrators last year at the opening of the Original Art Exhibition, which is the major exhibition now in the country. And he came up to me, and he was holding a martini, and he threw his hip into my hip and said, "So how's it going, girl?" And at 81 years old last year, I said, "Not bad, but obviously you're looking very well and doing well." And he is. He's still working and still doing some very interesting books.
So do you think that children's book illustration or book illustration in general has begun to find its place as a respected art?
Well, I certainly hope so. Maurice Sendak is 82 years old this year, and he's done so much for all of us in terms of children's picture books and
Where
art.
The Wild Things Are.
Absolutely, and many, many more titles. Back in 1970, actually, 1979-1980, I got involved in trying to find a gallery to do an exhibition of children's book art, and the Master Eagle Gallery finally said they would do it. Well, now that exhibition called the Original Art Exhibition is at the Society of Illustrators, and I took it there about 10 years ago and as founder presented it to them to care for and take care of. And now we're in this October when we open in New York. It's our 28th year of celebrating the fine art of children's books, and we have 250 pieces of original art in all the books. We have gold and silver medals. I started a founder's prize for the youngest talent, best talent. It's all a juried show, and so that will continue, and I'm very pleased about that.
So the art of children's book writing and illustrating is alive and well. There's still wonderful things coming out.
Yes, there are wonderful things coming out. My fear is that with the constant communication that this world seems to be totally in love with at the moment is hitting our very young children. And I would much prefer they go outside, pick up a stick, and say, "I'm King Arthur," than learn how to use a computer at 3.5 years old.
I know.
This year's conference of the NCTE, which is the National Council of Teachers of English, their theme is visual literacy, and they're really concerned about young children fostering their imagination through books, going out and having physical playtime, and not spending so much time at the computer. So they've invited me to come and speak because my book sort of fits into that niche, and I'm happy to do it. But that's the concern, that there are all these great children's books, and that we're just hoping that children stay interested in them, that teachers and parents realize how important they are. And I have a little paragraph in my author's note. It says, "Children's books have never looked better or been more important. They're one of the few quiet places left where a child can go to be alone and to travel worlds past, present, and future. They're often the first place children discover poetry and art, honor and loyalty, right and wrong, sadness and hope. And it is there between the pages that children discover the power of their own imagination. They are indeed a dress rehearsal for life."
Dilys Evans is author of the book Show and Tell, Exploring the Fine Art of Children's Book Illustration. This book can be yours with a contribution of $45 to KSFR. We've got only three copies of each book, so call in quick, 428-1393, 428-1393. This book is a wonderful gift for children and adults alike. Wonderful illustrations. Dillis Evans is going to be presenting from 120 to 150 in the Children's Pavilion at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival this Saturday from 10 to 5. And I didn't mention before that Sandra Benson of the Tibetan Folk Tales will be presenting from 2 to 3:30 at the Mystery and Fantasy Pavilion. Dillis, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. Can I say one more thing?
Very quickly.
I think that KSFR deserves every fundraising effort they have because they do so much for the arts in general. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'd like now to welcome Dana Levin. She is chair of the Creative Writing Program at the College of Santa Fe, and she's a poet who has published award-winning books of poetry. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So, would you like to start by reading a poem?
Okay, I'm actually going to read a poem that is from my book, Wedding Day, which came out in 05 from Copper Canyon Press. It's very short.
Okay.
Six monarch butterfly cocoons clinging to the back of your throat. You could feel their gold wings trembling. You were alarmed. You felt infested. In the downstairs bathroom of the family home, gagging to spit them out. And a voice saying, don't. Don't.
Dana Levin, so have you memorized a lot of the poetry? When you do a poetry reading, do you always memorize it?
No, hardly ever. But the short ones stay in my head, obviously, longer than the longer ones. But when I'm working on poems, my revision process is I start them from beginning to end over and over and over again. So they do get lodged somewhere in a brain cell in there, if I can just call it up.
Did you start out as a young person being a poet, or did you get in through other kinds of creative writing?
Well, actually, when I was in the second grade, I had a teacher named Mrs. Long, and they used to take us to cafeterias to watch films, and we used to have to come back and write paragraphs about the films we saw. And we saw this film one day about an astronaut who was pursuing a monster through the cosmos, and when I got back to class, I started thinking about the words I would use to talk about this film, space, race, chase, and somehow I knew at the age of 7 that because the words sounded the same, that meant I wanted to write a poem instead of a quote-unquote story. So I asked Mrs. Long, you know, can I write a poem instead? And she said, why, sure, honey. And so I wrote my first poem about the space monster and this astronaut. So it was always there. I always wrote. I was always generating stories and poems from a very young age.
Isn't it nice that your teacher said, sure, honey, instead of saying, no, you can't?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was very lucky. I had really, really encouraging teachers throughout my life, even in college, very important figures in my life. I think it's one of the reasons why I became a college professor. And one of the things I'm excited about in terms of the book festival on Saturday is that two of my students are going to be reading at the Poetry Pavilion. They're very excited. They're very nervous. But mentorship is so crucial for young artists and young women artists. And I certainly benefited from excellent mentorship with the people that I have met through my life. So it means a lot to me.
What particular challenges do women poets and women authors face, do you think?
You know, I actually think it is fairly egalitarian in the poetry world since the stakes are so low. Women tend to do very well in the poetry world. They don't face any problems with publication or anything like that. I have a friend who is a young fiction writer who is constantly upset about the phrase chick lit. And the idea that if you're going to write about young people, if you're going to write about domestic situations and you want it to be a little bit snappy and you want it to have some humor, it somehow gets relegated to this area that she finds demeaning. We understand it as a marketing ploy, and I'm sure those books do really well, but the idea that women aren't writing literature, I think can persist. It's a long-held idea, like way back from the 1700s when women first started writing novels, and Jane Austen couldn't even write under her own name. You know,
right.
It had to be by a lady, you know, kind of a thing. I don't think it's nearly as prevalent as it used to be, but it is interesting to see how, just even from marketing, there's this idea of, like, you know, chick lit. I mean, we don't call it man lit. or anything like that. So.
Right. I know, when it's about guns and cars and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Dude lit.
Yeah, dude lit. There you go. We should start a new genre.
Hey, there's a store called Dude Lit.
There is.
And on that random note, do you want to tell us or read us one more poem?
Sure. I'll read you a poem from my first book, In the Surgical Theater. It is another short poem. It is called Smoke.
And by the way, Dana Levin's book, In the Surgical, actually one of the books, I'm not sure which book we're making available, but one of Dana Levin's book, if you want to read more of her poetry, you can call 428-1393 and just say you would like the Dana Levin book.
In the Surgical Theater.
And the first three people who do so will score a copy of the book. Go ahead.
Smoke. The schoolhouse is red as it's supposed to be, and the smell of wood smoke like a fire, like a fire. Where are we going, my nation, my loved one, in this valley like a sink with no drain at the bottom where you and I trudge through the snow? Where are we going, my nation, my loved one, in this pit of water where we'll drown come spring, in this poem without instruction, without point or moral, where the smoke stands in for the flame?
Dana Levin, come back to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe another time.
I will, and thank you so much.
We'll do more. Dana Levin is a poet who will be at the Santa Fe, be at the Poetry Pavilion at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival tomorrow, Saturday, the 27th of September, and she will be presenting from 1:45 to 2:10.
Is this speed dating?
This is speed literature.
Ah. I got a thank you for you.
Yes.
Deborah Belts. Deborah.
Thank you, Deborah.
Uh-huh. And Deborah said, this really resonates with me, in these difficult economic times, although she's feeling some difficult economic times, public radio is so important that she has to make a pledge.
Excellent.
Yep.
Well, very, very wonderful. Thank you so much. I'd like now to welcome Leslie King. Her book is called King of the Road, Adventures Along New Mexico's Friendly Byways, and she has written for many magazines, including New Mexico Magazine. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
We had you on a while back, and you were talking. I love the fact that you could name your book after yourself, King of the Road.
Yes.
But you had this wonderful gig of just driving all over New Mexico and writing about it.
Yes, that's what I do. I take a road trip every month, and I take along my camera and my sometimes my mother or father, and just go to a little town somewhere and see what I find. And it's always interesting. There's always something new, and that does come out every. It's a monthly column in New Mexico Magazine, and that's what this book is. 24 of those essays drawn from my travels over a period of. I've been doing it. I'm into my seventh year now, but I at this time that the book came out, I'd been doing it about 3 or 4 years.
What were some of your favorite places to go?
Oh, that's always a challenge to say, but I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized that I've traveled from Columbus in the south, which is just an amazing place right on the border, up to Costilla in the north, which, again, is just this undiscovered little mountainous town. In the middle of nowhere, and from Luna in the west, which is a little town that has the world's biggest small town rodeo, and then I've traveled to Puerto de Luna in the east, which is a place that Billy the Kid hung out, and now is just this beautiful valley along the Pecos River. So I've sort of done all directions.
I suppose there's a genre of writing where writers go to small towns and they write about it, but there's just that little edge of making fun of the sort of quaint country people or something like that. Do you ever find yourself trying not to do that?
I actually tend to make fun of myself more than the people. I find that I'm actually usually the one that's dealing with more silly things than they are, just in my own little world of my mind. And my column in New Mexico Magazine is actually transforming even more into that kind of thing, where I sort of make fun of my own journey in life while I go to these places. But no, actually, I have a very deep respect for the people in these small towns. You know, most of them really are living there by choice, and they live there because they don't want the glitter and the pace of the cities that we tend to thrive in, many
the
of us.
The glitter and the pace of Santa Fe?
Oh, yeah, and they like, I mean, many of them sort of, I know, Santa Fe, I mean, it's kind of seems like a joke, but to them, Santa Fe is like, either it's either this amazing place where they like to travel to occasionally because it's so kind of hip and interesting, or it's just the opposite. They hate to have to come to any city at all. And many of them, they just so pride themselves on the fact that their lives are very simple. And also, you know, these people are truly living the ideal of community, a lot of them in these small towns. I talked to a woman the other day on a trip, and she told me the story of this 80-year-old man who was on his roof, and he fell off, and he was in the hospital and badly hurt. And the community went and fixed his roof while he was in the hospital so that when he got out of the hospital, he could just move into his house and be okay. And no one, I mean, asked to do that. No, but the people just, it was just like an automatic thing. And that's the type of thing that goes on in these communities. And they really love that. They feel so, many of the people feel very taken care of and safe.
Leslie King is the author of the book King of the Road, Adventures Along New Mexico's Friendly Byways, and this book can be yours if you make a contribution to KSFR. The first three people who call 428-1393, 428-1393, or 1-866-907-5737, 1-866-907-KSFR, can get a copy of this wonderful book. It's also a very beautiful book. It has nice pictures and did you do the photographs yourself?
I did do the photographs, yeah. And I will say Betty Brodsky at New Mexico Magazine Press did the production on it, and it is truly a beautiful book. It's she made it look kind of like a journal, and it has a
yes.
nice cardboard cover. And it has a photo of myself and my mother and her dog in a convertible on the cover. But they use really heavy stock paper, so the photographs are just very vivid. And there are a lot of portraits of people from these little towns in the book, and as well as landscape photography. And so it is a beautifully produced book.
Leslie King will be presenting at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival from 11:45 to 12:15 at the History and Biography Pavilion. This is happening this weekend on Milner Plaza on Museum Hill right here in Santa Fe from 10 to 5. We have 7 of the 80 women authors who are going to be there this weekend. Leslie King, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd like now to welcome Lisa Dale Norton. She is the author of the book Shimmering Images, A Handy Little Guide to Writing Memoir. I love the title.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So, A Handy Little Guide. How did this... First of all, you must be a memoir writer yourself.
I am. I have a memoir out from St. Martin's called Hawk Flies Above, Journey to the Heart of the Sand Hills. It's part nature writing and part memoir. And then this book has just come out from St. Martin's about how to write memoir.
Now, why is it called Shimmering Images?
Great question. Shimmering Images is both a pretty cool phrase to put on a cover, but it also refers to the idea that's central to writing. Shimmering images are iconic memories that we never forget. They exist in your mind like little snapshots that stay with you your entire life. And as a teacher, I've discovered that those images become sort of the bones of the memoir. They become the structure. If you can recall those memories, and everybody can recall them, then if you string them together, they become a story.
Now, why do you think some memories shimmer and others don't? I mean, is there usually pain or conflict or some strong emotion associated with them?
I think there's power. And when I say shimmer, I really do imply that there's some kind of energy calling you into the picture to look at the story behind it.
And when you do that, when you explore it, what happens? I mean, I think that that process of memoir writing must be quite a journey in its own.
That's the thing about this book. It says it's a handy little guide to writing memoir, but it's really a guide to transforming your life, masquerading as a little book about writing. Because when we look at those pictures and when we have to put them into a structure, the structure of a story, we end up actually transforming our lives. So that's part of what happens when you start writing about those stories. You discover things behind the image that you didn't know were there.
Is that, I would think that that's sometimes quite a difficult process.
Like all creation.
You're creating the world wasn't that easy either.
Exactly.
If we use our collective memory.
Exactly.
We're talking to Lisa Dale Norton. Her book, Shimmering Images, A Handy Little Guide to Writing Memoir, can be yours if you call 428-1393 for the KSFR Fund Drive. And she will be presenting in the Home and Family Pavilion at 11:45 to 12:45 at the New Mexico Women's Book Festival. Now, Home and Family, why'd they put you in there?
I think that may actually not be correct. It may be the biography.
Ah.
And that just may be a typo.
Well, if you are there at 11:45, ladies and gentlemen, you can look around until you see the long, shimmering, strawberry blonde hair of Lisa Dale Norton. Do we hear some noise in the control room?
Yes, we do. And
oh,
it's only me to say thank you to Lindsay Robinson for her call a few minutes ago.
Thank you,
Lindsay, very much for calling the cafe.
Thanks to all of you who are calling, and for those of you who haven't called yet and would like a copy of any of the books that we have been talking about so far, Sandra Benson's Tibetan Folk Tales, Dillis Evans' book on children's book illustration, Dana Levin's poetry, Leslie King's book about the called King of the Road about New Mexico's friendly byways, Lisa Dale Norton, A Handy Little Guide to Writing Memoir. So do you find yourself teaching people memoir writing?
I do. I teach for UCLA. I live here in Santa Fe and teach for UCLA online. And I also teach workshops all over the country. And I have a bunch of clients who I help write books. And narrative nonfiction is my specialty.
Do you find that it's more women who are doing this kind of writing? Or not so much?
I do have a number of men, but yes, in general, the people who come to my workshops in New York or Los Angeles are mainly women, and across the country, mainly women, yes.
Do you ever find that there's somebody who's trying to write a memoir where you want to say to them, just go back and live some more before you try to do this?
Well, I'd never say it that way. I'd say that usually if we have some distance to look back on things, then we can create more meaningful stories.
How very polite. So would you like to say anything about public radio? Are you a KSFR listener?
I think that that's exactly what we do here with public radio is we transform our lives. And that's what the shows do. And every person that we hear interviewed on public radio gives us an opportunity to transform our life. And that's what I'm interested in, transforming my life and other people's.
So Shimmering Images, A Handy Little Guide to Writing Memoir. Lisa Dale Norton will be presenting from 11:45 to 12:15 and signing books after that. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And I would like now to introduce Robin Rahm. She is a fiction writer, and her book is called The Mother Garden. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
And by the way, all the books we're talking about can be yours if you make a contribution to KSFR. The book contribution is really low today. Usually books as gifts from public radio are considerably more than this, but for $45, we have three copies of each woman's book. Each woman is going to be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival this Saturday from 10 to 5. Now, you are a fiction writer, and you are also a professor at the College of Santa Fe.
That's right, I am.
So how did you start writing fiction? And tell us about this book, The Mother Garden.
Well, I started writing fiction, you know, really, really long time ago. I wrote as a kid. And then I studied creative writing and English literature in college. But I didn't really know if I wanted to be a writer. It seemed like a really hard life. And so after college, I actually became a federal investigator for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in San Francisco, which I did for a couple of years until I had to write recommendations for the head of the Commission on Employment Discrimination investigations that I'd conducted, and my investigations were always 10 to 12 pages of dialogue and description, and finally my attorney advisor was like, just go write, and so I got an MFA, and
so funny!
Yeah. So it's always been sort of this innate, you know, I would describe the the people at the car dealership I was investigating and what they were wearing. And it always seemed really important to me, to the, you know, to the case, that, you know, they were standing this way and talking this way. So it's just a natural way that, of seeing the world.
I think there's something very weird and sort of specific about bureaucratic kind of police writing. You know, they'd say an individual instead of a person, you know, stopped, and we'll sort of use big, overly long Latinate words to describe very simple things.
Yeah, never been my specialty. I was always talking about, you know, this man wore a big diamond ring before he said the thing about, you know, how many people they'd hired that year. And, you know, those kinds of details.
Did you use the material from your investigation time in your fiction?
I never have. Well, one story in the collection, a story called The Egg Game, there is a guy who works for, I actually think I put him at the EEOC, which is where I used to work, but mostly the book is not related to anything that I did as work for the federal government, no.
So where did you go from there? So your supervisor said, Robin, get out of here.
Yeah, she said, you know that most people turn in 5-page, you know, 1 through 5 legal analyses, and yours are literally 10 pages of single-spaced, you know, narratives that have a chilling ending.
And, did they always have a chilling ending?
Well, yeah, you know, it's an exercise. I was working in this bureaucratic job, and this was how I got to re-experience the sort of humanity of these investigations, which were really interesting and could never be totally condensed for me into this 1 through 5, you know, and this is my recommendation.
Did you find yourself, when you started writing short stories, having chilling endings?
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, there's a Ann Beatty blurb on the back of my book where she talks about the endings, and so I hope that's what you'll feel if you read the stories.
So the Mother Garden, what are some of the themes in your the stories in that book?
Well, a lot of the stories deal with dark mysteries in our daily life. And my mother died when I was younger. She was sick for most of my 20s. And the world didn't seem to me to have much actual logic in it, and so a lot of the stories confront that lack of logic by using the bizarre and the magical. One of my stories, a father is found in the desert by his daughter. She hasn't seen him in 26 years, ever really in her life, and he just has a note on his toe that says, "This is your father, do as you will," and she has to take him and kind of raise him up in her house. And so a lot of bizarre and magical themes that, to me, explore mysteries of our life on Earth.
Do you find that, for example, magic realism is inspiring for you?
Sometimes, if it is exploring things that can't be articulated in any other way. You know, our life is full of things that can't be explained. You know, why people die when they do, why people are born to do what they do. And so, as a, you know, its metaphoric strength is that it can point us to things that can't be explained any other way.
Who are some of your inspirations as authors?
I just taught Flannery O'Connor, who doesn't do any kind of magical realism, but who's definitely one of my favorite writers, to my class. And they know she's my favorite. I find a way to teach her in every class. Joy Williams, I really love some of her short stories, and The Quick and the Dead is a novel of hers. Coates Sayre, who wrote Disgrace. So I'm not necessarily a big... I don't have a particular style that I read more than others. I just love good writing.
Robin Rahm is a fiction writer, and she will be at the Fiction Pavilion at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival this coming Saturday from 10 to 5, and she will be presenting Robin Rahm from 2 to 2:30 in the Fiction Pavilion, and then signing books not too long after that. What are your students like?
My students are great, and they asked me to send a shout-out to them if they are listening. I have wonderful, creative, bright, interesting, sometimes nutty students at the College of Santa Fe, and they are they're very brave. I was just commending them the other day for their ability to take risks. They're so young, and they're already really serious writers, and it's a lot of fun to teach them, so I'm very lucky.
Robin Rahm's book, called The Mother Garden, can be yours if you make a contribution right now to KSFR 428-1393, 428-1393, and from out of area 1-866-907-5737, 907-KSFR. Robin Rahm, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
And I would like now to welcome our last author from the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival, which is happening this Saturday from 10 to 5 at the Milner Plaza at Museum Hill. Nancy Rayner is the author of the book Acrylic Revolution. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And you are an artist working in not oils but acrylics.
Actually, I work in all mediums, and one of the things that I'm known for, I get a lot of people coming, traveling from across the country to my studio, and they're interested in transferring from one medium to another. So I use everything from oil, watercolor, gouache. And I think that's what made the book so unusual is that often acrylic, and this book is just about acrylic, even though I do use a lot of mediums, but acrylic in the past has been taught mostly how to imitate oil painting methods,
right,
and how to imitate watercolor. And there was this moment for me where I suddenly looked at the paint and said, wait a minute, you're a crazy animal. What do you want to do all on your own? And it changed my whole way of painting, and all of a sudden many, many techniques that people who use oil paint or watercolor wouldn't think of. And so this book is unusual in that it's over 100 techniques. Each page is a different technique, like a recipe book, but very unusual techniques, not your usual type of take a brush, mix the medium in, and stick it on.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. What is the difference between, I mean, I guess one dries faster, acrylics dry faster than oils, but what did you discover when you looked at acrylics and said, what are you?
That's interesting. I was trying to imitate, I'm traditionally trained as an oil painter, so the first thing I did was take the acrylic and try to imitate how I used the oil.
It's so fun, because that happens in every medium. Video imitates film, and then it finds its own voice. You know,
that's
film
true.
Imitated theater, and then it found its own voice.
That's true. It has to start with the root of where we're coming from, and
right,
then find its own voice. But all of a sudden, I found that I was working at a lot of quick layers, and each layer was a different technique in response to the previous one. Sort of like abstract expressionists, where they put a mark down and then the next mark is in reaction to the first one. I'm working in layers. Each layer, which is an entire coverage of the painting surface, is a reaction to the one before. And so I started thinking, wow, this is almost like working like a sculptor, building from a base on up, which is very different than an oil painter, where I would work in one wet layer for a long time and just try to keep transforming that one layer.
We're talking to Nancy Rayner. Her book is called Acrylic Revolution, which can be yours for a contribution of $45 to the KSFR Fund Drive, 4281393.
Got another thank you.
Oh, good.
Anonymous from Chimayo.
Anonymous from Chimayo. Excellent. Thank you, whoever you may be. And by the way, if you do make a call, you don't have to say your name. You don't have to say anything about yourself, except to our control room volunteers, of course. But your name doesn't have to be announced on the air. You can just make a contribution, 428-1393. It's our fun drive, and during this time, as Dal Dierman can tell you, we are required by the necessity of staying on the air and having to do things like pay bills to ask you, our listeners, for contributions with whatever your means are. If you can make a small contribution, great. If you can make a small contribution, even better. But it's the same. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you make that call. Call in to 428-1393. And we try to make it easy for you by giving you a choice, for example, today, of any one or more, if you contribute more, of these seven books by these seven amazing women who are having a wonderful time. All of them have gotten to the study or the Santa Fe Baking Company, getting to know each other. And I'm having a wonderful time getting to know them. And
it's kind of like a Whitman sampler.
It is. And we have the chewy fudge right in front of us in the person of Nancy. No, the sweet sugar.
Chewy fudge is good.
What
like
would you? What, if you were a chocolate. No, tell us more about acrylics.
It's funny because actually I use food a lot as my metaphors in when I teach. People always laugh at me. But today there's a ribbon cutting at the Civic Center at 10 a.m. City of Santa Fe Arts Commission bought one of my paintings, which is installed in the new Civic Center. And so that's a good one to see in terms of this new way of using acrylic, which all these layers, there's a lot of new refraction. It just doesn't look like oil or watercolor. It looks like a completely different animal.
Can you use acrylics kind of like watercolor? I mean, you can melt them way down with water.
Sure, and in my book, I cover how to use the acrylic to imitate gouache, casein, tempera, oil paint, watercolor. It can imitate just about anything, but it is quite an incredible versatile. I mean, the the full title of this book is Acrylic Revolution, New Tricks and Techniques for Working with the World's Most Versatile Medium. It's the world's longest title, but it's over 100 techniques, and that includes a good part of it is how to imitate other ones.
But that's really what your discovery is how to make it its own. I mean, do you feel like your work has developed as a result partially of writing this book?
Most definitely, yes. And I think that by having all these techniques at your fingertips, which is what this book is about, again, it's like a good chef wants a lot of different recipes and then mixes and matches them to create their own look. My idea is that a technique is not a painting. You can't just copy anything from this book. It's not about copying,
right,
which also makes it unusual for a how-to book. But in that, if you just take three or four different techniques and combine them in different layers, that's how acrylic works differently. Then you come up with your own unusual, unique painting.
Nancy Rayner, 428-1393 is the number here at the KSFR Fun Drive. She will be presenting her book, Acrylic Revolution, with the very long subtitle, at 1:20 at the Art Pavilion at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival on Milner Plaza, which is on Museum Hill in Santa Fe. It's where all that whole big group of museums is. Nancy Rayner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we are getting to the end of the hour right now. Dal Dearman, are you still with us?
I'm here.
So what's happening? Are the phones ringing off the hook?
The phones are not ringing as much as we'd like. They have rung. We have moderate response, I'd say, this hour.
Okay.
So do something dramatic.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk turkey here. The only way the public radio stays on the air is through your contributions. If you are listening every day, if you like this show, if you're one of those people who says, I really love Mary Charlotte's show, I really love the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, or KSFR News, or Democracy Now!, or any of the shows you hear, what we would like you to do, and what we in fact need you to do, is to make a call and give within your means. If you are somebody who is making the Santa Fe Living Wage, maybe you can give 2 hours of your work. If you are a professional who's making over $100 an hour, maybe you can give 2 hours of your work, the equivalent of 2 hours of your work, of your earnings. 428-1393, all you have to do is make a call and say, you know what, 2 hours of my time is worth the 40-plus hours a week that each of the employees at KSFR puts in to bring this to you. Dal is one of the hardest working general managers in radio. He makes it all happen. You have a juggling job, which I can't even imagine doing, Dal Dearman.
What? Oh, I was napping.
And we thank you. And we thank you for the incredible distance that you have brought KSFR in the, what is it now, 7 years that I've been with the station?
7 years and 17, including before we officially became part of the Northern New Mexico Radio Foundation, 17 fun drives.
We've had 17 fun drives.
Hard to believe, but true.
It is, in fact, hard to believe. And each of these fun drives keeps us going because listeners who get the importance of not only public radio, but of their relationship to public radio, because this is an interconnected world. This is a world in which each action that you take affects not only yourself, but somebody else and something else. So when you take the action of, for example, saying a kind word to somebody you don't know, that has a ripple effect. That makes a difference. In ways that you can't even begin to predict, or an unkind word. That has another ripple
effect.
Either
way,
when you make a contribution to KSFR or any public radio station or any organization that you really care about their work, things are able to happen that couldn't happen otherwise. We are able to continue bringing you. I mean, it sounds like, oh, it'll happen without me. No, sir, or ma'am, it won't happen without you. If you want the Radio Cafe to stay on the air, if you want KSFR to stay on the air, it's easy. Make a call, 428-1393. We work very hard to bring you this show. We work very hard to bring you some of our best programming during the Fun Drive. I have a box right next to me with 21 books in it, 3 books of each of the women whom you've heard this hour. If you would like one of those books, all you have to do is give us a call, 428-1393. Just tell them which one. And Dal, would it be possible for us to make this set of books available throughout the rest of the day?
I'll have to ask Mom.
We'll have to ask Linda Highhill,
sure.
the very wonderful person, because what I'm going to do is as soon as this program is over, I am going to go to my podcast site, SantaFeRadioCafe.org, and put on that site, on the front page, when you go to SantaFeRadioCafe.org, the names of each of the authors, the names of their book. And so if you were thinking, what was that book, that fiction book by that girl whose name I can't recall right now, all you have to do is go to the site and read the name and then call 428-1393, or if you're out of area, 1-866-907-KSFR, 907-5737. And you can then call in to our pledge line with armed with the name of the book and the title of the book. You can get a copy of it. You can make that contribution to keeping public radio on the air.
That sounds good.
So, give a call. Make the phones ring off the hook. It's time for me to go.
Hey, Mary Charlotte.
Yes.
We just confirmed, just came up through the... With the pipeline here, yes, books can. Those books can be available throughout the day.
Wonderful.
Not a problem.
Those books will be available, so I'm going to go as soon as we get off the air right now and post them on the site. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte.
Thank you all who've given this morning.
Thank you all very, very much who've given this morning. If you haven't given yet, do it now. It's quick, it's easy, it's anonymous if you want it to be. And we are ever so grateful. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528, which is not to be confused with 428-1393, which is the pledge line number, which we would like you all to pick up the phone and call right now.
Please do.
We're podcasting at the site santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services.
And when will the podcast be on Huffington Post?
I don't know. I'm trying to get in touch with their technical people.
But they will be. That's just exciting as can be.
That is very happy-making for me as well. You can subscribe to the show on
iTunes. Sorry I interrupted.
Oh, it's okay. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz. Thanks to Dal Dearman. Thanks to our wonderful volunteers. Thanks to our wonderful staff at KSFR, the marvelous Linda Highhill, the amazing George Weston, Sean Conlon, Marilyn LeBlanc, Laurel Reynolds, and many, many more, our wonderful news team at KSFR. And thanks to you, our listener, for being part of the KSFR family, for making it all happen, for being part of our fund drive, 428-1393. Hey, tomorrow, Dal, you're going to be with me.
I sure am. Surprises are in store.
And the marvelous Robert Knott will be with us, and so much
more. We get along really well, you know.
You and Robert?
Yep.
So I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Am I still needed?
I'm not sure.
Thanks a lot.
We'll see.
Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow, and once again, please be part of the KSFR family by giving us a call. Hasta la vista. Mwah.